number 6, Judges chapter 16, verses 1 down to verse number 6. While you're turning there, let me just say how thankful we are for all of our graduates. You saw their photos and bios there in the bulletin this morning, and we're thankful for all of you, and we're looking forward with great expectation to see what the Lord's going to do in your life. Let me promise you that if you heard a speech at baccalaureate or if you heard a speech at the graduation that said that these were the best days of your life, they were lying, all right? It only gets better from here, I promise. And so we want you to know that you have our support, and we love you, and we're looking forward to seeing what the Lord does in your life. Judges chapter 16, verses 1 down to verse number 6. Going to continue in our series this morning, Samson and the Price of a Bad Haircut. And we're coming to that infamous story about Samson and Delilah. And we're not going to get very deep into it this morning, but we're going to kind of set the stage. And so I want you to hang with me and listen closely as we look at Samson and the man who was self-deceived. Judges chapter 16, verses 1 down to verse number 6 says, Samson went to Gaza, and there he saw a prostitute, and he went into her. The Gazites were told, Samson has come here, and they surrounded the place, and they set an ambush for him all night at the gate of the city. They kept quiet all night, saying, let us wait till the light of the morning, and then we will kill him. But Samson lay till midnight, and at midnight he arose, and he took hold of the doors of the gate of the city and the two posts, and he pulled them up, bar and all, and he put them on his shoulders, and he carried them to the top of the hill that is in front of Hebron. After this, he loved a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah, and the lords of the Philistines came up to her and said to her, seduce him, and see where his great strength lies, and by what means we may overpower him, that we may bind him to humble him. And we will each give to you 1,100 pieces of silver. Verse number 6, listen to this. So Delilah said to Samson, please tell me where your great strength lies and how you might be bound that one could subdue you. Now, old Samson, he's lived quite a life already, hasn't he? Just in a few chapters, he's gone from a newsboy to wonder boy, and now today we're going to see that he goes to playboy. He's lived quite a life in these few short years. He was born with all of the pomp and excitement and born with all of the talent in the world, and yet in chapters 14 and 15, we saw that his strength would ultimately become his curse. You see, he was born set apart by God with a distinct purpose and calling on his life, and he was born with some supernatural strength that nobody else had ever beheld. And yet he was given just a couple of commandments, a couple of laws that he was supposed to follow, and he's already sacrificed, he's already compromised on all of them but one. See, he lost his purity already, he'd touched dead bodies and he had drank in wine, and now he's also, at the end of chapter 15, lost the love of his life. He's seen her burned with her father alive, and he's lost her at the hand of the Philistines, and so he's already seen some loss. He's seen some loss of purity. He's seen just a lot of things already in life. He's also seen great miracles. He's seen by the hand of the Lord him kill 1,000 men, heaps upon heaps. And he's seen others fall, some 30, an entire village of men. He's been able to see some things that you and I could only wonder about and can only dream about in our minds already in just a few short years. But when we came to the end of chapter number 15 last week, I kind of left off just wondering, I wonder if Samson's ever going to learn his lesson. You know, at the end of chapter number 15, Samson had been given several opportunities to change the direction of his life. Samson had made a decision that he was going to live his life on his own terms, in his own strength, in his own power, and he was going to live for his own selfishness and self-centered desires. And at the end of chapter 15, he loses his wife, and he loses his new father-in-law, and he has to smite the Philistines. And at the end of it, I'm just sitting there thinking, you know, surely an opportunity like this, surely a fall like this, surely this experience is going to wake Samson up, and I wonder if he's learned his lesson. Well, chapter 16 tells us that we didn't have to wait very long to find out if Samson had learned anything at all. Because in verse number 1, it begins with the line, Samson went to Gaza, and there he saw a prostitute, and he went into her. Gaza was one of the Philistine cities, so apparently Samson hadn't learned much at all. Because now, right after this last encounter, where he's attacked by 1,000 men and he has to be delivered by a supernatural hand of God. Even after that, Samson is throwing himself right back into the very thing that got him in trouble in the past. A Philistine woman had led him astray, and now he goes right back down to a Philistine city in Gaza, and there he's wanting to mess around with another woman. Now, he should have known by this point, shouldn't he, to have nothing more to do with Philistine women. But he just couldn't help himself, right? Now, it's entirely possible. I want to point out that we don't know how much time lapsed between chapter 15 and chapter 16. It is interesting that chapter 15 closes with the words, "And Samson judged Israel 20 years. But we can't read too much into that. Some might say, well, you know, probably some time had passed, and Samson, like the rest of us, just kind of forgot what God had done in his life. He just kind of over time forgot what the Lord had done, and so let's give him a break. Maybe that's what happened. Maybe some time passed and Samson forgot what God had done. Well, I don't know if that's true or whether it happens right on the heels. Chapter 16 happens on the heels of 15. Whatever it was, it really shouldn't matter when you think about it. It doesn't matter whether a year has passed or 10 years has passed or even 20 years has passed. Samson should have known at this point in his life that God was not going to bless any union that he had with a Philistine woman when God had specifically given Samson the job of delivering the Israelite people from the Philistines. What's interesting is that Samson didn't just go down to any woman in Gaza. The verse number one says that he went down to a prostitute. He went down to a working woman. And I think the fact that he goes to a working woman only underscores Samson's mindset at this point. Samson is so selfish, so self-centered, that he is not even concerned about whether or not he loves these Philistine women. He's now going to live life on his own terms, no matter what the connection is, whether there is one or not. I mean, after all, think about it. It underscores the fact that Samson is not even concerned about love in this story. This is all about Samson fulfilling his desires with absolutely no concern for himself or others that are around him. It's interesting. I had forgotten that this story even took place. I remembered when Samson was born, his story, and I remembered the story about the lion, and I remembered the story about his wedding. I remembered how Samson was delivered by the Lord's hand with the jawbone of a donkey from 1,000 men, and I remembered Samson and Delilah. But I had forgotten all about this unnamed woman that shows up in Gaza. But I want you to know God put this story here for a reason. Watch what happens. Predictably, the Philistines, they find out that Samson has come down to Gaza. And so they come and they lay a trap for him. They decide that they're going to surround the place and lay in wait for him all night long. And one of them apparently comes up with a bright idea that all of them are in agreement with, that they will wait patiently for the break of the morning or the break of the day. And then when the light comes up, then they will lay hold of Samson and they will kill him. Now, they were probably assuming that Samson would have been tired from the night's activities and would not be himself, but rather that he would be caught off guard and he would be too physically weak as well as cognitively weak to defend himself in this moment. And so what they do is they lay this trap. And then they make their intentions. They lay them out nice and clear. Verse number 2, "Let us wait till the light of morning, then we will kill him." Notice the transition that has taken place in Samson's life with the Philistines. When they first came into Samson's life by way of the marriage, they wanted to toy around with Samson as much as he wanted to toy around with them. They wanted to solve the riddle and have him provide these 30 new garments of clothing. Then after Samson gets mad and he gets revenge on them, then they want to arrest him. But now, what are the Philistines saying? "We don't want to arrest him. We don't want to toy with him. We want to kill him. We got to wipe this guy off the face of the earth." There'd be no arresting him. There'd be no binding him, no sending him to prison. You see, Samson had become a fly in the ointment of the Philistines, and it was time to absolve them of this problem. The thing that strikes me about this is the very different mindsets between Samson and the Philistines. The Philistines, they have a worldview and a mindset that says Samson's got to go. Samson, on the other hand, has a different worldview. As we discovered last week in chapter number 15, Samson really didn't want to cause any harm to the Philistines. He wanted to just kind of play around with them. Unless he was provoked, which he says that he was coming to avenge, right? Unless he was provoked, he really didn't want to have anything to do with them other than just play with them. In his mind, for Samson, these Philistines, they weren't all that harmful. They weren't all that dangerous. They were just a toy to be played with. Not only that, but when Samson got done last week in chapter number 15, you know, it was almost as though Samson thought the battle was over, the war was over. He thought that when they did what they did with his wife, then he would get even with them by burning their crops. Then when they killed his wife, then he went down and he slayed 1,000 of them. And so for him, it's been tit for tat all the way through this, and now it's over with, it's done with. Right? He's not worried about anything else. He's done. Everything's over with, and nobody's keeping scores. I'm even. I've accomplished my revenge. I've gotten my vengeance. You've done your things. Let's all move on. But you see, here's the thing. The Philistines, they didn't care about justice. They didn't care about equality. They didn't care about right and wrong. They didn't care about vengeance. What they cared about was they just wanted to kill Samson. See, Samson, I think, was self-deceived in this moment. He had bought into his own lie. He had convinced himself that the Philistines, that they were people that could be controlled by him. They were people that couldn't harm him. People that were like his own family. I mean, think about this for a moment, folks. If you are Samson in Samson's shoes and you've been given a specific purpose to deliver the people of Israel from the Philistines, but you continue to get married to Philistine women and to go down and to have these affairs with them, then aren't you in some way saying, I want to be a part of the Philistines? And I want to reconcile us all together. Let's all just be one big happy family, or at least I want to be a part of your family. But the truth was that the Philistines, they didn't want to be a part of Samson's family, and they didn't want Samson to be a part of theirs. They just wanted his destruction. Well, at about midnight, Samson, for whatever reason, he wakes up and he decides it's time to get up and leave, and so he does. And in the process, the writer tells us that he does something amazing. He discovers their plot, and to their surprise, even their best laid plans go awry. He shows them just how strong he is when he lifts up the doors of the city gate along with the posts themselves, and he lifts them up, puts them on his shoulders, and he carries them to the next city that's over by Hebron. Now, I want you to notice two things about that act. First of all, it's quite a spectacle. I mean, in their day, gates were elaborate doors, right? These are not little bitty doors like these doors right here. Although I have to confess, if you needed me to pick up one of those doors and put it on my shoulder, I couldn't do it this morning. But their gates, their doors were huge, right? In fact, archaeologists tell us that their gates were probably about 2 stories tall. They were elaborate. They were to set the stage for what was in the city. They told any passerby about what they could expect when they came in. For example, in Corinth, Paul talks about how the Corinthian gates were so bright and beautiful that it attracted outsiders. Well, here in Gaza, we don't know what their gates were made of. Probably they were made of either iron, another type of metal, or maybe even wood. Whatever the case, imagine 2 big gates that are 2 stories tall. How heavy those must have been. Anybody ever hung a fence? Because that's what happens next. You know, when you hang a fence, you got to dig down these posts, right? And those posts, they're not allowed to turn. When they turn, what happens? Well, your fence either falls down, or if it's on a gate, the gate, you can't open and close it. So you got to dig way down deep, and the heavier something is, the deeper that post has to be. Well, these gates are huge, right? And Samson, it says, not only picked up the gates, the doors of the gate, and put them on his shoulder, but he also, it says, picked up the bars and all, the poles and everything, the posts. He pulls them right up out of the ground. Now, what strikes me about that is Samson probably didn't have to do that. I mean, this guy's pretty strong, right? I mean, if you're able to do that, you're not like, you know, like, I don't know, me, right? You're pretty strong, right? I mean, you got some muscles, right? What's interesting to me is he probably could have just swung his fist and busted right through the gates. But instead, what he did was he picked him up and he put him on his shoulders and he walked on. It's almost like in that moment, Samson was bragging. It's almost like he was looking at the Philistines and saying, you know what? You think you're strong, you think you're powerful, you think you're going to get me. I want to show you just how strong I am. I'm so strong, I'm not even going to bust these gates down. I'm just going to lift them up and carry them off. Second thing that strikes me as interesting about this spectacle is I want you to notice what's missing. In chapter number 14, when the lion attacked Samson, you remember what happened. It says, then the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon him. When in chapter number 15, the Philistines came to bind him, what happened again? The writer tells us the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon him. But in chapter 16, in this story, do you notice what it doesn't say? You see, it doesn't say anywhere that the Spirit of the Lord came upon him, but rather he just picked him up. Samson, you see, in this moment, what the writer is saying was beginning to live by his own power and strength. In other words, Samson didn't call out to God in this moment. When the trap was laid, he didn't say, God, I need your help. I need you to come and to deliver me. But rather, he knew he was strong enough all in himself to pick up those gates and to go on. See, Samson had gotten full of himself. He no longer needed to call upon God to help him. He apparently believed that he was strong enough to toy around with sin and to live in his own strength all at the same time. And that is a dangerous place to be. Samson believed that not only could he toy around with the sin, but he was also strong enough all by himself to deal with it. I want you to notice something that kind of gets missed oftentimes. In verse number 1, it says, Samson went to Gaza, and there he saw a prostitute, and he went into her. Verse 2, the Gazites were told, Samson has come here, and they surrounded the place. Now, what place have they surrounded? They surrounded the place where Samson was at, right? And then it says, and they set an ambush for him all night at the gate of the city. What does that mean? If they set an ambush at the gate of the city, at the same time they're at the place where Samson was at, it means that Samson was staying at the edge of the city. Can't you just hear Samson's excuses? Oh, well, you know, it's not like I'm going deep into the city walls, right? It's not like I'm going way in there and I got to fight my way all the way out. I'm just taking 1 foot in, right? I'm just barely inside the city. I'm right here at the gate. But it's interesting, there at the gate, that's where the trouble was. Samson, he began to live a life on his own terms and in his own strength. Didn't even need to call out to God anymore. That was his view. Samson's story to this point, well, it's one that we've all known so well. You see, God had been very gracious to Samson all these chapters long. Perhaps he'd been too gracious. He'd given him chance after chance, time after time. God had delivered Samson from the pickles that he had gotten himself into. And somewhere along the way, Samson had decided to not be humbled by all of that graciousness, but rather to grow more cold and more calloused. See, every time God delivered Samson, he had done it to change his direction, to make Samson stop and to think about where he was at in life and to make Samson think about the choices that he was making. But every time God delivered Samson, Samson took that grace and he spit in its face and decided, I'm just going to continue to go down this path because it's what I want to do. But you see, Samson was showing us the human condition at its very ugliest form. So oftentimes we think that just because God has been gracious, that means that we have a license to continue. So oftentimes with parents, we think that if we continue to be gracious, that the child eventually is going to turn over a new leaf. It's that long discussion that we have to have from time to time between when you're giving a person a hand up and when you're giving them a hand out. When are you actually helping an individual and when are you enabling them to continue in their course, right? It's that discussion over and over. When does a person need help through deliverance and when are they only being enabled to continue in their sinful choices? Well, you know, that's a difficult question to answer. And I can tell you that I don't always have the answer to it with each particular case. But I do think, in part, the answer to that question rests in the eyes of the one who has been shown the grace. You see, only Samson could decide what he was going to do with all of the opportunities that God was giving to him. Only Samson could decide how he was going to respond when God delivered him. Only Samson could decide which path he was going to take. Only Samson could take these many opportunities and change his course and his direction. And this morning, I want you to know, if you feel like God has given you a lot of chances, only you can decide with how you're going to respond to those chances. I can't. I wish I could. I wish I could tell you, hey, you need to stop and change course. You need to recognize that God gave you another opportunity, another chance. Don't squander it. But you see, Samson, he just wouldn't listen to nobody, and he had self-deceived himself. See, Samson, like many of us, he spat on the opportunities that God gave him. He spat in the grace of God, and he spat in the face of God, in my opinion. God kept giving him chances, and Samson just kept taking them as a license to continue on. He felt invincible. Nobody could touch him. Nobody could dare tell him that he was doing was wrong. He'd come to a place where only a fall was going to right his ship. The only thing that was going to change Samson's course was if he fell to a point that there was no turning back. You know, it's a difficult place to be when you get to that place where Samson was. But I have to tell you that there have been times in my life, especially when I was a youth minister, when I prayed that an individual or a student might go ahead and take a fall. Now, I want to be clear. I prayed that that fall would be not so severe that it ruined their life. But there were times that I prayed for that individual to be shaken at their core, to experience something that would just wake them up because they were not responding to the graciousness of God. God had given them opportunity after opportunity, but they just weren't responding to it. It's like it never happened in their eyes. And so I would pray oftentimes that God would just shake them, that they would wake them up. And then I would pray that that fall would be something that was redeemable, something that we could get past. Samson, he had been given so many opportunities, he just wasn't learning his lessons. He was stubborn. He's like me. It reminds me of those folks that you watch go through a fall, and sometimes they think it's a really small fall. From our perspective, it seems really big. And they pray a little sorrowful prayer, but then they go right back to what they were doing before, as though it had never happened. And you see, what happens many times is their survival from that fall, it revives their heart. They think that's going to happen every time. And they're headed for a fall, and they make a little sorrowful prayer, but a week later, they're right back. Here at the start of chapter number 16, once again, God gives Samson an opportunity to learn a lesson. God helped him deliver. Even though the writer doesn't tell us that, I'm sure that God's handiwork was in display for Samson to have gotten past these Philistines. And the Philistines had snuck up, they laid their trap, and Solomon was saying, you know, we got to be saying to Solomon, you got to get out of this stuff. You've escaped this trap once again. Wake up, Samson. Learn your lesson. Do not do this again. But again, we don't have to wait very long. Verse number 4 goes on and tells us that Samson immediately falls in love with another Philistine woman by the name of Delilah. Now, listen, I know that with Delilah comes this innate already knowledge of how the story is going to unfold, right? It's kind of like nobody ever names their child Judas. Did you know the name Judas means Jehovah leads? It's a beautiful name. But nobody in their right mind would name a child Judas. Why? Because of what's associated with it, right? I mean, I call my dog Judas from time to time, but that's because he's showing Kelly all the love when I'm the one who feeds him and waters him and all that other stuff, right? You know, that's a Judas, right? Or Benedict Arnold, right? Right? And nobody names their child Benedict Arnold Guffey. I mean, that's not happening, right? You have set that kid up for a year, for years of failure. Nobody names their children Delilah hardly anymore either. Why? Because everybody knows the story about what Delilah did in her treachery towards Samson and how she did it. And so I know immediately your minds go to the end of the story and you know how this is all going to unfold, but don't go there just yet. I want you to hang with me and go verse by verse as this unfolds. Samson's been given yet another opportunity, and here he is. He's been given the graciousness of God. All he needs to do is learn his lesson, turn around, go a different direction, and verse 4 says that he fell in love with another Philistine woman by the name of Delilah. What a sad, sad story. Can't you just hear Samson saying, you can't help who you love. You can't choose who you love, Pastor. I guess if for Samson love was a feeling, then an emotion, well, then that statement's probably true. And I want you to know this morning that Samson may not have been able to help what he found as beautiful and who he was attracted to, but here's the thing. He could determine how he responded to that attraction. Samson needed to learn the biblical admonition to guard the heart, to respect it and to protect it at all times. Samson should have learned something about himself by this point. He should have known that for all of the physical strength he had in his body, he had absolutely no emotional strength. For all of his physical strength, he had not the ability to avoid the Philistine cities and their women and all of the attraction that was found in his heart. He was given to Israel to deliver them from the Philistines. Samson should have recognized that left on his own strength, his own power, this was never going to happen. But instead, he was like an alcoholic continually going to a bar. He just kind of kept hanging out, kept hanging around them, kept going down. And his heart just couldn't take it. He wanted these women so badly. And in this portion of his story is a lesson for all of us. You see, beloved, nobody is going to be intentional about protecting your heart this morning except for you. You and I have to make an intentional effort to be protective of our hearts, to not set ourselves up for failure. In order to do this, we have to be willing not to be self-deceived as Samson was, to have a proper view of himself. You know, Samson, I think he thought every time he'd go down to these Philistine cities, you know, it's not that big of a deal. The girls there, they're nice and they're respectful to me. And yeah, I know me and the Philistine men, we've had our differences. I mean, they did try to kill me and all, but it really wasn't that bad of a deal, right? And I'm pretty strong fella. I mean, look at me. I can pick up the gates and pull up the bars that hold those gates. I'm a pretty strong dude. I mean, who in their right mind thinks that something bad is gonna happen, right? Look at me. I am big, macho, tough. I've got everything I need. I am way too smart. They'll never figure it out. They would have never figured out my riddle had my wife not told them. You can hear old Samson with all the excuses. Man, look at how good I am. I'm strong and tough, and I can be tempted all I want, but I'm going to withstand it. I think if you would have asked Samson at this point in his life, he would have told you that there was nothing wrong in life. There wasn't a problem in the world. He just said, oh, life is good. It's great. No one had ever harmed him. Ever meet people like this, Brother Rick? You can just watch the fall. It's just taking place right in front of your eyes. And you walk up with a sincere effort. You're doing okay. Is there something I can help you with? Oh, life is great. I don't know what you're looking at. I'm not married to the person I'm living with. You know, my kids don't like this person. You know, but everything's great. Yeah, my church attendance has dropped off a little bit, but I'm still there once a month. You think that's going to harm me? Samson, he probably would have said, oh man, life's good. Life's great. Nobody's touched me. Seems ridiculous to us, but to Samson, he was great, life was good, and all was right with the world. But it's hard to see ourselves for what we are sometimes, isn't it? Samson couldn't see himself in this moment, neither can we. Samson's problem is mine so often. We have to see ourselves through the lens of Christ. Many times in church, what we do is we look around and we say, you know, I may not be perfect, but I'm better than that person. And I'm better than that guy, and I'm better than that woman. And maybe I'm a good father, I'm a good husband, I'm a good coworker, I think I'm a good boss. We list all of those things that are good about ourselves, and we fail to be honest and transparent and to see ourselves for what we are. And because Samson wasn't honest with himself, he kept putting his heart in situations where he was doomed from the start. There is no possible way this is going to work out for his good. There is no way that this is going to work out well for Samson. He had survived 100 times, but it was just a matter of time before this would be the last time. It was just a matter of time before this last incident was going to be what it took to break him, and there would be no turning back. His entire life would literally collapse around his head. He had no idea, I'm sure, going into Delilah, that that would ever happen to him. He would have imagined that life was perfect. But the reason why was because he was deceiving himself. What strikes me is that no one is being deceptive in the story except for Samson. As you watch everything unfold, in chapter 15, the Philistines, they made clear their plans. They came down to arrest him, to bind him, to subdue him, to humble him. In chapter 16, the Philistines announced they were going to kill him. Now here comes the story with Delilah. Listen to what happens. Verse number 5, the lords of the Philistines, they came up to her and they said to her, seduce him and see where his great strength lies and by what means we may overpower him, that we may bind him and humble him. Some translations read that we may bind him and destroy him. They made it very clear, patently clear. Nobody could question this. Samson, we are coming to destroy you. Then it comes right out of their plans. We want to arrest him, bind him, humble him, destroy him, right? And look what happens in verse number 6. This is so silly to me because I can't use the other word, the other S word, right? Stupid, for those of you wondering. So Delilah said to Samson, please tell me where your great strength lies and how you might be bound and that one could subdue you. Not only have the Philistines said what they're going to do, this woman is laying there with Samson and says, Samson, you know, you're a pretty special dude. You know, I like you. Would you mind telling me something? How could I kill you? And Samson goes, oh, makes sense to me. She must have my best intentions in mind. Samson better sleep with one eye open is what I think. Delilah looks at Samson. She says exactly what she wants to do. Samson, tell me where your strength's at so I can bind you, so I can arrest you, so I can humble you, so somebody could overtake you. I mean, wake up, Samson. Smell the coffee, buddy. This lady's got no good intentions. She's telling you exactly what she wants to do. It's kind of like the old story of a woman, and I don't know if you've heard this story, and I may tell it not perfectly, but there's a story of a woman whose house was destroyed in a flood, right? And the waters are rising. She gets up on the roof because she's got nowhere else to go. And up there on the roof, she begins to pray, oh God, deliver me from this flood. Not very long after, the sheriff's department comes by in a boat and they offer her a ride. Ma'am, we'll give you a ride. And she says, no, that's okay. I don't need it, right? After the sheriff's department's gone, she prays again, God, please deliver me from this flood. All of a sudden, the National Guard comes sailing through in their boat. Would you like a ride, ma'am? No, I'm fine, just waiting, right? As soon as they're gone, she begins to pray again. Oh, God, deliver me from this flood, right? All of a sudden, a boat comes washing by. Nobody in it, just washing by. Hits the house. All she's got to do is step into it. She just watches it fly on by, right? I'm fine. All of a sudden, she dies of dehydration. She comes into the presence of God. She looks at God square in the face and says, why didn't you send help for me? That's what Samson was like in this moment. I mean, come on, folks. I mean, do you really see how the story's unfolding? Everything is blinking in front of him. Hello, Samson. Neon signs are blinking rapidly. Wake up. Don't do this. You're going to regret it. Don't do it. It's going to be a bad deal for you. But you see, that's the blindness of sin. It kept Samson from seeing who he was and how he was acting. It prevented him from seeing what his decisions were costing him and the people around him. Let me give you the moral of the story this morning, a short illustration and an application, and we'll be done. The moral of Samson's story up until this point is simply this. When your eyes are fixed on the wrong things, nothing will follow except death and destruction. Samson had focused his eyes on the wrong place. You see, God had created Samson for a great purpose. He was to take the Philistines captive, and he was to free the world from the Philistines. Specifically, he was to free God's people. And so Samson was to see the Philistines through God's eyes, to see them through his plan. Samson was to see the world through the power of God, and he was to manifest his strength, his power, through God's power working in Samson's life. He was to see the Philistines from his perspective and therefore deliver the people of Israel out of their hands to destroy them. That's why God made Samson. But somewhere along the way, the writer says that Samson saw a beautiful woman in Timnah. And then he saw a beautiful woman in Gaza. And then he saw a beautiful woman in the valley of Sorek. Samson was supposed to have his eyes fixed on God, but his eyes were fixed on the brush and the bramble, all the things around him. And here's what's worse. I don't think the real problem was Delilah or the woman in Gaza or even the woman that he married back in Timnah. I don't think any of those were the real problem. The real problem was Samson had turned his eyes on himself. He was focused on himself and nobody else, and because of that, he could not see God. Just a little illustration to bring this home. In Hunter's education, for those of you, many of you probably taken it, one of the first rules they teach you is to always be aware of your surroundings. I haven't given a hunting illustration for a while, so it's time for it to come out. They teach you that there are four rules to handling a gun. Are you ready? Number one, treat every gun as it is loaded, as if it is loaded. Write these down. These are important, okay? If I don't save you with the gospel this morning, maybe we'll save your life by telling you how to handle a gun. Treat every gun, number one, as though it was loaded. Number two, don't put your finger on the trigger until you're ready to pull the trigger, right? Number three, don't point your gun at anything you are unwilling to kill. And number four, always look past your target to see where the bullet is going. How did I do? Any officers in the house? I did pretty good, right? Those are the four rules of gun safety. And they just drive those home in the Hunter Safety Program because nobody wants to have an accident. Most accidents, in fact, happen when someone fails to do one of these four things, and most of the time it's the latter. They don't take the time to look past their target and to see what's there. That being said, about 5 years ago, there was a story that came out about a conservation officer in my home state of Illinois. And please do not judge all of the good people of the fair state of Illinois by this story. And I know about this story because he worked in the same district as one of our family friends. The long and the short of the story is this. The conservation officer had gotten off from a long shift, and he was sitting in a deer stand with his only opportunity to go deer hunting, and suddenly, out of nowhere, some doe pranced onto the scene. So you know how this goes while you're out deer hunting. You've sat there, you've been bored, you've been falling asleep. All of a sudden, some doe show up. He was scanning around, and he was trying to decide which one he was going to shoot. And he decided since they were a group of does, he would pick out the biggest one of the bunch. And so he did. He picked out the biggest one. Although it had come in from the opposite direction, it mattered not to him. He picked up his gun. He set the scope crosshairs behind the shoulder. Even though that doe was standing in a little bit of brush, he pulled the trigger, and bang, the gun goes off. Ran a few yards, and it fell over dead. He was elated. He lowered his gun, climbed out of the stand, and then he began his joyful, elated walk to his prized animal. Only about halfway there, he suddenly realized something had gone terribly awry. As he walked closer and closer, his heart of jubilation began to sink into despair as he realized he had indeed killed the biggest animal in the woods that morning. He had shot the family cow. Now imagine this with me. This is a conservation officer. This is like sending a police officer to prison, right? The local paper, because this makes big news in Illinois, in Ramsey, Illinois. The local paper asked him for an interview because this was such a big deal. They asked him how he had possibly made this mistake of shooting a cow instead of a deer. By the way, for the record, it was a Holstein cow, black and white. I have never seen a spotted black and white deer in my life. But I give to you his response. Here's his quote. Are you ready? "Well, I saw the other deer, and I raised up my gun. Even though I could not see the whole animal through the scope, I was sure I was looking at a deer because it was walking like a deer." As in on four legs, man? Is that what you mean by walking like a deer? Now, I cannot even begin to imagine what this fellow went through over the next several weeks and months as word continued to spread about the conservation officer who killed the family cow. But the terrible mistake he made that morning is what you and I do on a daily basis. Here's what I mean. When we fix our eyes on the wrong target, destruction and death are always to follow. Like the conservation officer, when we don't pay attention to our surroundings, when our sight becomes fixated on the wrong target and we don't take the opportunity to identify that which we are trying to attain, bad things will happen. For Samson, he had set his eyes upon himself and upon pleasing himself and nobody else, and a fall was coming, and it was coming fast. There would be no stopping at this time. Beloved, when you stop being careful to pay attention to your surroundings, when you stop being careful to setting your eyes on Jesus Christ, that's what Paul says in Philippians, that he will set his eyes on the prize, Jesus Christ, that he may attain that prize. When you stop fixing your eyes on the right prize and you lose sight of your surroundings and your eyes get focused on bramble, it will leave in its wake death and destruction in your life. That's what happened to Samson. He took his eyes off of God and the perception that God had given to him. He focused his eyes on himself, and he got distracted by the bramble that was around him, mainly the woman at Gaza, the woman at Timnah, and now Delilah, and nothing but death and destruction was headed his way. And the sad part is of it all for me, the saddest part of the whole story is that everybody told him what was going to happen. Reminded me of a young lady that we had in our youth group many years ago. She wanted to date this fellow who was well known in the school for not being all that great of a gentleman. And they dated for about a week, and she wouldn't do some of the things he wanted to do. And so he wrote her a hateful little note, and broke up with her, embarrassed her in front of the whole school, right? And she comes to church all upset. And I'm confused, because when I was growing up, I mean, it was hard for me to get a date, okay? I know some of you find that hard to believe. But I certainly didn't get a date by being mean to a girl. But today's young ladies, it's like sometimes the meaner you are, the more attracted they are to you. She's all upset. "Oh, you don't understand, Brother Chris. He's really a great guy. I can tell. Let's read this note to your parents. Let's see what they have to say about this, right? Let's tell everybody about what he's done to you. Yeah, he's a great guy, right?" Heartbroken over this fella. Heartbroken. I mean, just tore up inside, right? I tried to tell her the best of my ability, as well as others and her parents. "Listen, you ain't lost nothing. You've gained. You've gained by this encounter, right?" A week later, guess what? She's dating him again. You know what? A few months later, there was a baby born. She sat in my office one morning and said, "I don't understand how this happened." Folks, we get so blinded, because we're not willing to really look at ourselves and see ourselves for who we are, to see what's going on around us. And when that happens, we're headed for a fall. What we need to do is focus our attention on Jesus Christ and see ourselves through his lens. And when we do that, we'll accomplish the purpose that he's made for us, to give him glory and to make him famous in our lives. Stand with me reverently and let's pray. Father, thank you for this morning, for the opportunity you've given us to come into this place and to fellowship together, to meet together under the authority of your word and in the presence of your spirit. We ask now that he might move in our presence, that he might move in our hearts, that he might make us new people this morning. He might change us and make us the people that that we're supposed to be. We want to live for your glory this morning. We want to make you famous. We want other people to come to you because of the testimony of what you've done in our lives and how we set ourselves apart. We set our hearts as guarded and we protect ourselves. God, I think Samson is just a little bit too much like me sometimes. He got so overwhelmed with his own ability that he totally stopped depending on you whatsoever. And even though he just went inside the gate, it really wasn't that big of a step. It wasn't that far into the city. Just inside the gate was the trouble. And what he found was there was a trap laid for him. Sometimes I deceive myself and I think, it's not that big of a deal. It's just barely. And when we get in that mindset, I'm headed for a fall. I think probably today in this congregation, a crowd this size, there's probably some folks that probably feel like they're in a fall right now. The world kind of unraveling around them. And what their prayer has been is, God, deliver me from this. Get this out of my life. When what you want to do is you want to teach them so that they might change direction, change course. You're using that fall providentially in their heart this morning so that they might get a new message, have a new direction. I pray that you'd make that crystal clear this morning as you work in the time of invitation in our midst. For others, some in this congregation just so puffed up with themselves, they think, that's Samson's story. That could never happen to me. That's a dangerous place to be as well. I pray for them this morning. I pray that you would protect them, protect whatever fall that they may be about to encounter. I pray that you'd at least protect their families, protect them, and make it not so devastating that it destroys everything, but make it enough to shake them, to awaken them from their slumber. For some others, maybe a little bit like me, sometimes we just get a little complacent. I pray that you'd wake us up from that slumber as well, because when we get complacent, that's when the enemy has an opportunity to move and we're just not paying attention. I pray that you do a work in our midst this morning. I pray that you take a sober message like this about self-deception and you would use it as a mirror held in front of us so that we could see ourselves for who we are. Do business with your people in this place in Jesus' name. Amen. We're gonna